You're listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hello and welcome to episode 136 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, the season four finale. I am Nathan Dockin. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin if you so desire. And I'm joined as always by Manly Van Lee. What's up, Van?
Hey, glad to be here with you bozos, because you're real bozos. That's the best insult I've got. I don't have anything.
Oh, it's a good one.
Oh. It took me a month of not doing Nasty Cast to come up with that insult.
Whoa.
Impressive.
I see I've devastated Ron.
Yeah, I don't know if I can even. I might have to bow out. I don't know.
Great Ron Rigney. How are you? Are you doing okay? That was a deep cut.
Yeah, I'm trying to recover.
I guess that burn.
Yeah, you know, I guess I could come back with saying your mom's a bozo.
Oh. He just threw bologna at his computer. He's so angry. That's what I do every time I'm angry too. Yeah, just throw some bologna.
You just have to have the bologna on hand, which I often do. I mean, you just stop at the store. You think, I'm going to get some water, maybe something for dinner tonight. Oh, and of course, my three packs of bologna that I'll throw at the computer when I get angry later.
You know what? This is really important. What is your stance on spam?
I have never eaten spam. I've avoided it thus far, and I will continue to avoid it.
Same here. I've never eaten it, and just of seeing people open it in the can and the way it looks with the water, and there's nothing that makes me ever want to change that stance on ever having spam, so I'm good not trying it.
It's like, it's not even water. It's like gelatin. It's kind of...
See, that's even worse.
It really does not look good, but no. I love spam. It's so good. Ugh.
So what? Okay, so what's the best way you can describe the taste and the texture of it then?
Well, the texture is sort of bologna-y, bologna hot dog kind of texture. So it's kind of the in between. Like you could squish it in your hand, and it would just sort of turn to mush.
Which you often do, yeah.
I do. That's like my stress ball. I just take a lot of spam.
And it's probably and it's the same spam probably for the last 10 years.
Yeah, you just kind of goop it back together in a ball and you re-squish it. It's chock full. It's not even real food, so like it never goes bad. But I tell you what, the flavor, if you fry it up in a pan, which is my preferred method, I actually don't even eat it if it's not fried because it's kind of gross. But if you fry it up in a pan with some butter, then it's almost like bacon when it gets crispy.
I'm going to doubt that. I'm sorry. No.
It's really salty like bacon, and it's kind of got the crispy consistency.
Listen.
So if I want that, I'm going to eat bacon.
Exactly.
But it's different. Like I'm telling you, once you have
good.
It,
it's different. Just, great.
That's what makes it so special.
Now, see,
so after you fry it, like, what do you put it on a sandwich? Like, what do you do with it? Do you just eat it the way it is?
You can put it on a sandwich. It's really good that way. Like, it replace bacon with some spam on a BLT there. I also like to have it for breakfast, like just next to my eggs and toast.
This is so gross.
So would you call it a SPLT?
A spamlet. I've had a spamlet. You chop it up in an omelet.
Now, doesn't Hawaii have like all these insane flavors of spam? I see that somewhere?
They have like different flavors. Yeah, they'll have like, I'm sure it's pineapple. That's super like racist, I guess, of me. I don't know what ist.
Hawaii is not a race.
It's, exactly. Nationalist? Statist? I don't know. But anyway, I'm sure it's pineapple flavored. But now, see, I have had Vienna sausages, which are very similar, that you pop them in the little can and it's got the gel. But I imagine, just like spam, you're talking about the texture, they're very just almost mushy. It's like they're not even a solid anymore, and that's really gross to me.
Yeah, I guess I can't speak to that. I've never had those. And I never would have probably tried spam if it weren't for my dad, because he was one of those, like, he had some weird taste. So I just tried it growing up because he would always have some on hand.
I picture just like a bigger version of you, like, whoa, we got to get out to the store and get some spam. I'm going to fry that up and teach you like some bacon.
Yeah. Oh, and it's got like 3 million calories in half of that can, too. So it keeps the fat on you in the frigid North Dakota winters.
So when you eat that, do you eat an entire can in one sitting?
Oh, Lord, no. That's a lot.
Okay, because I have actually witnessed somebody do that just raw out of the can.
Ooh, no, that's too much.
Yeah.
This is very salty.
The person I saw do that goes by the nickname of the Elk Man.
I want to meet the Elk Man.
Yeah, you do. He's a pretty interesting guy. Yes, you do. He is actually the guy that came up with the Mod A nickname.
Oh, really? Nice.
Wow.
Yes.
That's extreme salt. Now that I think about it, like, kind of like you're putting like green olives in light beer, that kind of thing, or pickles or something like that. I wonder if I couldn't just douse a little Spam.
I don't know what you people do up in North Dakota. Well, olives in your beer? And...
Okay, yeah, explain this. I've never put a pickle in my beer.
What?
Are you serious?
It sounds like an old limerick that someone recited, like, I put a pickle in your beer.
Well, it is now.
No, so why do you put the pickle in the beer then?
Because it's delicious. Like, especially if it's a spicy pickle. There are these really, really spicy pickles. I forget who makes them. Otherwise, I'd give them a shout out because they're delicious. So you could eat them on their own, obviously, and they're very spicy and good. But if you put them in just some light beer, like Coors Light is my light beer of choice. It's not what I'm drinking tonight, and it's not what I choose to drink if I'm just having a few beers. But if I'm out in the town and I'm getting wasted and I'm having a dozen beers, it's going to be a light beer like Coors Light. And so I'll like to put a little extra flavor in there because they're quite bland. You just stick a spicy pickle in there. And it makes the whole drink kind of pickly and spicy. And then you get a nice, delicious pickly treat at the end once you've drank everything else.
So what do you can order I get for you, boys? I'd like a Coors Light with like four pickles. Just stuff them in there. It's fine. Yeah.
You can totally, yeah, that's a totally normal thing to order a pickle in your beer.
I think we have different definitions of normal.
So will they put like a big, like huge dill pickle in there? Or is it like a small pickle?
Well, it's a slice, like it's the long one.
Like
but yeah,
a spear.
It's not like the huge one.
It's not a full deli pickle.
Okay.
Like just crammed into the can somehow. Because also you're not putting this in a bottle. Like this.
No, this is.
You have to put your pickle in a in. No, you have to put it in the can. Like that's the classiest way you can do it.
You could. It's going to be hard. So you get to eat the pickle when you're done, though. It's going to be hard getting it out of the can.
Okay.
I also like to nibble on it, you know, sporadically as I'm downing the beer.
Are there any other strange regional food things that you can think of real quick?
Well, it's hard to pull strange off the top. It's totally real.
Okay, well, normal for you, it could be, I don't know. Because I've learned a couple tonight. I've never heard the pickle in the beer thing.
Pickle and
I've seen people put salt in light beer.
Yeah, I've seen
that. Oh, see, that makes me vomit.
What, but okay. A pickle doesn't? You're like, oh no, you seem salty. To have put salt in your beer. Pish posh, what? But if you have a pickle, stuff that right in there. Bread and butter is my preferred.
Dill pickles, spicy pickles, green olives, that's the way to go.
Okay.
And I can't think of any other strange thing because that's normal here. So
yeah, okay.
It's hard to pull. I mean, there's like really weird cultural stuff like lutefisk, but that's like nobody eats actually lutefisk except for like 80-year-olds.
I love his rap. He's amazing.
Didn't we have an episode about? Oh, geez, I just got that. Didn't we have an episode where we talked about lutefisk?
Oh boy, I don't know.
I think we did because that's the fish you boil for 4 days.
Yeah,
and it's like mushy and.
Oh no, you don't even. Yeah, you don't even boil it for 4 days. You let it sit out for like 3 weeks.
That's right. Yeah, and it's just rotten fish and it's chewy and.
And then that's an episode before I was in the fold because I don't remember because I don't know what this is. I don't know that I've ever heard of this.
Look it up. It's gross and people eat it.
It's gross. Yeah. That's like a super old Scandinavian thing. So it's sort of going out with whatever the generation of like 75-year-olds is right now.
Okay.
Anyway, that was maybe the longest episode we've ever had. Yeah, that's the finale. We get to screw around quite a bit. Hey, what's your favorite thing to put in your beer besides your wiener? Tweet us at NastyCastBGFS. You can also follow Van at Manly Van Lee, and Ron is at The Real Made, M-A-D-A-Y. Also, hey, listen to Fantrax Dynasty Baseball. We've been doing that with regularity. You can follow that podcast on Twitter at Fantrax Dynasty. You can also check out BigGuyFantasySports.com for fantasy football goodness currently, since that is the season that is going on. And also rate and review the podcast on iTunes if you like us, or I will summon spirits into your house on Halloween and they will haunt you.
Indeed. And don't forget, later on in the episode, we're going to be performing an interview with the quote-unquote winner of the NastyCast Podcast Listener League. The quote unquote is there because actually Nathan won it. So we're giving it to the second place Bertha.
Yeah, baby.
I think there was some shenanigans. Something went down. Like maybe there was money exchanging hands because there's no way you should have won that league. There's
got to be. There's got to be some sort of collusion somewhere.
Yeah, well, I am in a league with Andy Behrens, and, you know, he's got a hold of the Yahoo people. Did a little number fudging.
Maybe give him a little beer with pickles in it and say, hey, why don't you throw me a little bone here? Got your pickle beer.
He's down in Chicago, I believe. So.
Spam for you there, Behrens. Get some stuff done. Put the wheels in motion, baby.
So, yes, we'll be talking with Podcast League second place champion Adam Wright later on the show. Also on the podcast, we'll go over our best and worst calls from the year, discuss what, if anything, we have learned, go over some news, and I don't know, talk about food and beer the rest of the time. We'll see. But anyway, before we get into the rest of the show, Van, thanks for the raspberry pie, man. It was delicious.
Absolutely. I'm glad you ate it. Hopefully the diodes and other business don't tear up your system, but that was my intention. I did want you to eat the little device.
Yes. So what it actually is, for those who are not in the know, which is probably the greater percentage out there listening, the raspberry pi is actually this phenomenal little device that plugs right into your TV. The Van shipped to us along with a Super Nintendo controller. And it has all of the Game Boy, Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis games on it ever.
Yeah, basically, well, and the device itself is a mini computer is what it is. It has RAM, the CPU, the GPU, all the other stuff. It just has some ports for an HDMI and so forth. I just program them to be a video game emulator, and you can run all sorts of different games on them. I'm currently overclocking mine and trying to get it to run Nintendo 64 games perfectly. It's a little stuttery and doesn't quite work perfectly, so until I get the kinks worked out, I wasn't going to send you guys that. But you can also buy USB controllers that are N64 controllers. You can get PlayStation games. You can do all kinds of stuff. And if you don't do just the emulator, you can use the actual Raspberry Pi computer board to do all sorts of other things. I've got an additional one here I'm holding in my hand right now that has a little LCD screen on it, and I use it as just like a mini music player. You can put different things on it, hook it up to TVs, play music, movies, all kinds of stuff.
Oh, see, man. I can barely change a light bulb, and Van is like,
yeah.
From the year 3017.
It's the first time anyone's used that meme text for me, and I'm excited that it happened.
And so I've got to say, like, it was all worth it just because the other night, I don't know, please God tweet me if any of you out there have played the Home Alone video game, which was for, I believe it was the Super Nintendo.
It was the Super, yeah, because I actually yes. pulled up the NES one, and it wasn't as good, but the Super Nintendo version was so good.
The wife pulled it up. I don't know why. I can't explain it, but the first time that she, like, you're Macaulay Culkin, and you're just running around your house, and you've got the worst, like, captions ever from, what is it, Marv and, who's the other guy, Joe Pesci's character?
Marv and Herb or Al or something like that. I don't remember.
Oh, whatever. Yeah, the wet bandits or the sticky bandits, whatever they go by. And, of course, they're scheming to just murder this kid, which is,
and,
like,
steal his toys. Because that's what grown adults do.
Like, target somebody else's house for once. My God, he's expecting you. He's foiled you every time. But they still keep coming back. So anyway, like, you run around. There's these weird henchmen in the house. And it took her about 2 seconds to die for the first time. And the best part about this game, I almost, like, popped a vein laughing so hard. As soon as you die, the screen goes to black. And there's this picture that comes up, that iconic scene of Macaulay Culkin with his hands on either side of his cheek. And he just goes, ah!
And it just says, oh, no, in like this retro font. It's great.
And so that is now my Twitter picture. So if you want to know what we're talking about, go look at that.
And I was giving you crap at first because only four titles below that is, of course, Home Improvement Power Tool Pursuit, which
is still need to check that out.
One of the best games ever created for the Super Nintendo. You get to play as Tim Allen, and you get to go fight dinosaurs. It's amazing. And you have power tools, of course, Binford power tools. But then after criticizing you, I popped it in. I started playing the Home Alone game, and criticism, revoked. Like, it blew my mind. It was that good.
Absolutely.
Joe Pesci's character's name is Harry, by the way.
Harry and Marv.
Yeah. Harry and Marv, yeah.
God, classic. Anyway, you know what? Let's go around the horn here. How did we do in all our leagues to kick off the show? Because obviously I'm the podcast league champion, as we said straight off the bat. Unfortunately, in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League, I fell into fifth place on the last day of the season. It's the first time I was anywhere out of the money since like early May. I'm not happy about that, but that's how it goes. Let's see, my other Dynasty League. Two of the other ones, my crazy score sheet league and my 16-team Dynasty League, I won my division in both of them and lost in the first round of the playoffs in both of them. And what else? Oh, my NL-only league, I ended up taking fourth, I think, because my pitching was just terrible. My closers were Yuris Familia and Mark Melancon. It's a good thing that I paid up for saves in that league. And so I didn't do super-duper well there. I think that's all my leagues. I might be... Oh, the new Fart AL-only auction league that we had locally this year, which was a hell of a good time. I finished in second place. I missed the championship by 1 point.
Oh, my.
How many
teams?
So, in total, I don't know. What is that, six?
No, I just want to know how many teams there are partially in the league. Yeah, I just want to know. Oh, well, we have four teams, but that's not all of them. That's exactly the question I was asking.
It is AL only, so it's weird because we only had, I think, nine teams. Oh, okay. Or did we get 10? There's 9 or 10. God, I can't even remember. But yeah, so we went AL only because it was a shallower league.
Gotcha.
So that's my season in a nutshell. I've had better years, but you know, at least I back to back defending champions of the Nasty Cast Podcast League. And this is the third year that we've done it. Joe won it the first year, former co-host Joe. And then I've won it the past 2 years after that. So we have yet to have any listener take down the league.
Ooh, it's a challenge issued for listeners out there.
Mm-hmm. Got to throw down the gauntlet, guys. Get on it.
Well, I'll go right into my teams. Overall, it was I would consider this year a successful season for me, though I didn't win any leagues. In the Listener League, I think I was fifth, so, you know, top third because we had 15 teams. The Dynasty League, I was dead last, but that's fine because this year I went all in for the rebuild. I traded away
any
major league pieces for, you know, good pieces. And I ended up at the end of the year with Thor on my team. I've got Brendan Rodgers. I've got a lot of good pieces, so I'm excited coming into next year. Teoscar Hernandez looks like he's going to be something special if the last, you know, couple weeks of the season are any indication. In my other Dynasty league.
Can I just cut you off before before you continue? Before I forget, I wanted to say RIP to former NastyCast league member Bob Mitchell, who unfortunately passed away this last year. So all the best to him and his family. And also, welcome to the league, Ron.
Yeah, that's not questionable. But yeah, we'll miss you, Bob. Thanks for being in the league. And
he was a great guy, great competitor. Loved playing against him for years and years in a couple different leagues. So really gonna miss him.
And hopefully his family's doing all right.
Yes. So continue.
Oh yeah. So anyway, my other Dynasty league last year, I think I finished. It was a 15 or 16 team. I finished 12th or 13th. Had a lot of injuries that year. This year, I made it all the way up to fourth. Fell into fourth at the very last week. Bradley, who's also in the Dynasty League, took over third. And we only play out the top three positions for some reason. So that was disappointing. But the overall jump and the fact that I made some good trades, I've got maybe a little bit older guys like your Scherzers, Klubers, but they're still really good. So they're going to anchor my team next year. I think I've got another shot. And then in my yearly leagues, I think I finished second in one and dead last in another and then fourth in one. So it was an overall successful year, but I did not win any money is what I would say. But I had a lot of fun doing it. And I'll talk about this a lot during the off season. If you hear me on the other podcast, the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast, this year was bizarre. It was the year of just weird things happening. And we'll talk about it later, too. And so I feel like if you came out with your head above water in any regard, you did a pretty good job this year just because of how weird it was.
Yeah, absolutely. So take us through your annual adventure, Ron.
Well, we'll start here. And I have a tendency to name a lot of my teams after things on Seinfeld. So I've named my team in the 19-team Dynasty Manhands. And so Manhans finished 7th out of 19, which considering I think I took the team over like 5 years ago, and I think I finished 18th in the league my first year. I've kind of moved up the standings a little bit, and I think I actually finished 6th last year, so I dropped a spot, but added some nice pieces along the way. I think I set my pitching up really nicely for the next few years. I was able to add Luke Weaver. I was able to add Marcus Stroman, paired them. Of course, I have Thor, and he was out all year, but I think that's a nice little pairing right there. If Julio Teheran can kind of figure out who he is and what he wants to do, I got a nice little rotation there. So I finished 7th there. I was able to actually win the Couch Tomatoes League, ran by our colleague over at BGFS, Mr. Mike Neese. I actually beat him in the final by a stolen base. If he had, because I think I kind of ran the table for the league for the year. I was first most of the way. And then when we got into playoffs, I noticed that of all the teams that I had beaten, the two times I played Mike throughout the season, he beat me both times. And so if his team had stolen one more base to tie it up 5-5 in the championship, I would have actually lost the tiebreaker and lost the league. So it came down to one steal in that matchup. And then my next one is probably my oldest dynasty that I'm in. I've probably been in, I think this is my 9th year. I finished 4th. It's been kind of a slugfest for the last few years between me and my good friend Tony Heber, who usually wins the league just about every year. He won it again this year, but I kind of dropped a little bit this year. I finished 4th in it. A lot of that's chalked up to the injuries that I had. I had Trey Turner out a lot of the year. I had a Miguel Cabrera who underachieved tremendously. A lot of my pitchers were hurt as well. I've got Thor there also, and Keuchel was out for a little while. And it just seemed like when I would get somebody healthy, I would have about 3 or 4 other guys that I'd have to throw on the DL and try to add some things. And so it just didn't end real well there. I'd say across the board, though, I had a couple other lesser Yahoo leagues that I'm in that I finished kind of middle of the road. And I'd have to say, I wouldn't say it was a terrible year, just kind of a middle of the road year, not one of my best. But like I said, I was able to win the Couch Tomato. So that was kind of cool because there's some solid players in there. So overall, not bad. But in a main thing I did in a couple dynasty leagues, I was able to add some nice young players and set myself up for the future. So hopefully I can contend there a little bit.
Yes, and I did also forget about the BGFS Dynasty Classic that we started up this year.
Oh, yeah, I did too, because I think I finished like 11th out of 13. So, yeah, that's probably my worst finish of any league I was in.
Yeah, I took 6th. That league was just really weird because we ended up switching a lot of the rules mid-season, which I've never been in a league like that before, but everything was just sort of screwed up, so it was necessary. So it was like the top 5 all season were in just a whole nother tier by themselves, and my pitching was just terrible. But so there's that.
I don't hate my team in that league, though. I don't know.
Neither.
There's a couple moves I made that I like, but you know, overall, I don't know. Didn't do too well.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's go into some news, shall we?
We shall.
I think, Van, did you want to talk about this Jock Jones situation?
I mean, do I want to? Sure, I guess. It's a little weird. I mean, well, first off, I forgot Jock Jones existed. And then I heard the news. He was, yeah, I know, twin and all that. But he was suspended indefinitely with pay. And I guess what happened is he well, can I say what you wrote down?
Yep.
He, in fact, flashing them titties. he released, I guess, photographs of his ex-girlfriend, nude photographs of his ex-girlfriend, which is a total dick move. So don't do that out there, listeners. Don't be a Jock Jones. But, yeah, so it's just kind of a weird thing for a player like that to get in trouble for. And, I mean, I guess what I would say is, I mean, I think this is probably a bigger crime than it's going to be considered. Do you think this really affects his career in baseball, or is this something where they're going to be like, ha, 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 you just ruined a woman's life, no big deal, and then slap him on the wrist and bring him back next year?
I don't think anybody cares about Jock Jones anymore. It's kind of like what you said. He's kind of gone by the wayside. I don't really think that this is – I mean, it's just kind of – like, remember Brett Favre, how he apparently was whipping out his dick all the time and sending girls pictures of that. Like, yeah. People still pretty much remember Brett Favre for being like a football guy instead of his wiener. So I don't really think that Jock Jones is anywhere near the level of fame as Brett Favre. So I don't think this will stand up too terribly bad. But yeah, total dick move. Don't be doing that.
Well, yeah. And when you put his name out there for the Jock Jones stuff, before I had heard about this, I thought maybe he was like making a comeback in Japan or something as far as a player. And a couple things I take away from this. Number one, the fact that this is a thing that happens is it says a lot about the where our society's headed. That's a whole other argument for a whole other day. But when you're on a team and you're on in a high level position, I mean, he may just be an assistant, but he's a hitting coach on a major league team. Okay. It's kind of like the thing that came out today. I don't know if you guys saw it with the Dolphins O-line coach. Did you guys see that?
I did not.
Okay. Yes. There's a video making the rounds
at a party.
And he's since resigned. And if you search up the new Dolphins logo, it's genius, by the way, based upon this story. The guy's on video snorting cocaine. You're an offensive line coach for an NFL team. So the fact that these people in the age of social media and knowing that anytime you're out doing something stupid, if you have any kind of fame associated with your name, someone's going to have you on tape or on phone, video, whatever, somewhere doing something. And once they do that, you're done. So if you want to keep this job, if you want to maybe I'm sure as an assistant hitting coach, he has aspirations of someday being a manager. You might not want to engage in things like this. You might not want to sniff cocaine with strippers.
Maybe. Well, and I'm going to bring this up too. So this guy resigned after this coke scandal, right? Is that what you said?
What's that? I'm sorry. I was just choking there for a minute.
This coach resigned after this.
Yeah. This the video. I kind of saw something about the video on Twitter this morning, and then by about early afternoon, he had released a statement. He had resigned. The Dolphins had addressed it, and he was done.
Well, see, I'm going to get on a soapbox briefly. I'll stop quickly. Don't worry. But that's fascinating to me because here we have Jock Jones releasing nude photographs of another person, like conceivably ruining another person's life. And it's like, yeah, you're suspended. We'll see what happens. But then this guy does coke, which only affects himself. And he's like disgraced. That's fascinating to me. I would figure like, you know, the guy who does coke, like, you're an idiot. Don't do that in public. I agree with what you said, Ron, but that's lesser to me than doing something to a woman or someone else. Mm-hmm. And that's just, but that's our culture. So anyway, it's off my
point.
Soapbox.
Fair point.
Yeah. I mean, in his defense, who wants to be coaching the Dolphins? So you got to.
Well, if you were an assistant coach on the Dolphins staff, it would probably drive you to want to use cocaine. So right. I guess it's, you know, you can kind of see where it comes from, I guess.
It's hard to hold that against the guy. But yeah, like you said, Ron, I mean, you got to take into account that somebody's probably watching you pretty much at all times. I mean, that's why I stopped masturbating while I'm delivering mail on the street. Like, somebody's going to be whipping out that camera.
I mean, those trucks don't even have doors. So, I mean, that's really hard to hide in those things.
And that's really bad when you pull up close to a semi and they look down. So, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to our best and worst calls of 2017. And I'm just going to do, I don't know, I can bring up the rear if you guys want. I was just going to sort of recap my do's and don'ts. Since most of my calls, I was able to look up and get the lines that I predicted for all of them again. But, I forget. Did you guys want to talk about the stupidness of Joe Girardi before we moved on to that?
The only thing I want to say is I don't care. This does not bother me as a managerial decision. This is what, the second or third inning when he made that call to not do the replay? And you only get the one replay, so I think people are making too big of a deal about it. I mean, he's been a pretty good manager, so don't let this last thing happen and possibly his last year as a Yankee tarnish the fact that, you know, he's been overall pretty decent. So I'm not too concerned about it.
Yeah, I'm kind of same way too. I mean, I know it's a playoffs. I know the games matter a little more, but if this is something that happened during a regular season, obviously you wouldn't hear about it. I don't think there would be this big of a deal about it. One of the things I thought was interesting, though, is I was kind of looking around just seeing what was out there as far as reaction to it. And I found kind of an interesting article on NJ.com about just kind of his explanation. And I won't go too deeply into it. If you Google it, it's one of the first couple things that come up. But he's just kind of talking in the post game about why he didn't and how it doesn't really justify kind of what was happening in the game flow. So it's kind of an interesting article if you look at it out there. But I mean, like I said, I get it that it's the playoffs and I get it that it's a kind of a high level situation. But like Van said, I mean, it's in the context, and when you look at just the way the game unfolded, I think it is being made to be a little bit bigger of a deal than it should be.
Well, yeah, it's the Yankees and it's the playoffs, so everybody's going to be watching with the microscope. But I do think that it was a pretty ridiculous move not to challenge that.
Pretty much, and yeah.
And it ended up costing them the game. I mean, really, what do you have to lose? So I don't know. I thought it was a terrible move, but not exactly a Yankees fan after they bounced my Twins from the playoffs. So can't say that hurt my feelings at all. So let's move on to our best and worst calls of 2017, like I tried to do before I realized I'm a dumbass and a bad host. So, Ron, do you want to kick things off here?
Yeah, I'll go with one. You want me to give my whole list, or I'll just give one and then go to you guys. I'll do that, I guess. One of the worst ones I had that I really thought was going to be an excellent call, and it's strange because it started out as a really terrible call, and later on it became a little better, and that's one of my Rays, Blake Snell. And, you know, going into the season, the one thing that he did struggle with, and we talked – because I was trying to think about a lot of the calls that I made when I was on with our guy John and Pemba and Nate Miller early on when we were doing our division previews, and we were talking about our favorites for each division, and he started out awful. The whip was high again, walking too many guys, and his biggest area of concern was he would get himself into trouble and not be able to pitch out of it. And so he kind of started the year with the same MO, I guess, as he had in previous years with that. But he got sent down for a little bit, came back up a little bit shaky on the second go round, but towards the end of the season really picked it up, and including his last start of the year, 7 innings, 13 Ks, but the thing was no walks in those 7 innings. The start he had before that, 7 innings again, walked 3, but he only allowed a couple hits. One, no earned runs in that one, 5 strikeouts. So he did have a couple of starts there at the end that give me a little bit of hope. I think that he might be a guy that I might be on again. That's not just me being a homer, but I think you're going to get him a lot. He might not even get drafted in some format. So he's a guy that's not going to cost you much next year. But overall, I think he was one of my worst calls to start out the season because I expected him to come in and be lights out. So I had him at the top of my list to start off.
Well, since you went negative, I'm going to go positive in certain regards, and I'm going to give you some of my best calls. And the first one I'm going to come out with, because it makes me cackle with pure, pure evil joy, is Jonathan Villar. I don't even want to do the cackle. I just want to talk about Jonathan Villar, because at the beginning of the season, I had a good friend of mine drafting, doing a ton of mocks, and Villar was going second, third round, and that was insane. We had a guy who never really walked too much. Sure, he steals your bases, but the last year was a phantom year to me. I mean, this is a guy who rarely ever posts an OBP of 300, and guess what? This year he went back to sucking. So I was pretty delighted that I was correct in that one. I guess I'm languishing in someone else's bad fortune, but I'm pretty happy that I avoided him at all costs and did not get burned by him.
Guess who I had on my NL only team that I was talking about with that horrible pitching? I took Jonathan Villar, and he did not do me any favors. And I think we've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I was okay with the ADP just because of the crazy stolen base upside. And he does have a 9.1 career walk rate, by the way. Just so it's not like he never draws a walk, but sure. It was just like I definitely was willing to see some, pullback because he had such a huge year in 2016, but just the way that he regressed blew my mind because all of a sudden he just completely lost his approach at the plate and he started hacking at everything. And it didn't make any sense. Like every year for the last 3 years, he had chopped his chase rate down every year, 30% to 27% to 24%. And then this past year, he was back up to 29.5%. And he is just whiffing at everything. It didn't like he just completely abandoned his approach and backslid in every way. And he was terrible. So, ugh.
Well, and this is something you can't necessarily quantify, but in watching Jonathan Villar, there's no real way to describe this, but he just does not feel like a professional hitter. Like, sure, he made these strides and he looked better, but if you watch at bats, even in the good season, it just looked like he didn't quite know what his plan was.
Yeah, he was never like a great hitter. It was just about the steals for me.
Yeah, and I just thought it was absurd. Now, what I did say is that I thought the power growth was probably legit. Like he was going to be maybe a 10 home run guy, and he hit 11 this year in 400 at bats. So he could have arguably gotten close to the 19 he had in 700 plate appearances last year. But yeah, I was pretty delighted that I stayed away from him because it didn't negatively affect me at all.
I got him in a couple places, but I don't really feel like I gave up a ton. But I also kind of kept my expectations in check too. The one dynasty that I got him in was the one CBS dynasty that I've been in forever. And so I could give up a little bit more in that one to get him because I did need a few steals here and there. Is it safe to say that he's kind of along the lines of maybe kind of a Billy Hamilton, maybe with a little more pop, a little less speed?
I think he can be thought of as that now.
Maybe a little bit.
Like, I get
maybe
it.
Maybe if he stole a few more bases, but...
Yeah, not the same level of speed. So like a poor man's Billy Hamilton, I guess.
Well, see, the funny thing is after this year, now I will probably pay the cost for him because I think a lot of people will be soured on him and he'll be cheap enough that, yeah, I'm totally cool taking him. I just wasn't going to take him in the second or third round ever.
He was so bad, though, he might not even have a spot to play next year, depending on what the Brewers do. So
that's true, yeah.
30% K rate too.
Whew. Yeah, exactly. He's always swung and missed a lot, but this past year just got out of control. And that, you know, that's what made him so profitable in 2016 is because he was dirt cheap. Everybody was waiting for, who was the next big thing? Was it Orlando Arcia? Mm-hmm. Everybody was waiting for him to call it. You know, so they're all stashing him and thinking he was going to be this next big great thing. And everybody was completely passing over Jonathan Villar. And that's, you know, he was super cheap. So he's a big value MVP. Anyway, and I wanted to touch on Blake Snell, to your point, Ron. 5.88 walks per nine in the first half this year, 2.91 in the second half. Got much, much
big
better.
Change.
Yeah. So I'll take my turn here and start with the shortstop position. If you guys, I don't think you can find it anymore. I'm pretty sure it's off bigeyefantasysports.com. But in the preseason, I came on the website a little bit late, but I did manage to roll out my hitters, dudes and don'ts anyway, which is my sleepers and bust list for the year. So I'll kind of go over that, see how I did or, you know, how well or poorly I did. Anyway, shortstop, we'll start there. My don'ts, Elidmus Diaz was a big don't for me, and that worked out because he spent most of the year in AAA. Basically, it happened exactly the way I thought it would happen. He had a completely unsustainable BABIP last year. He's a flyball hitter, and he got dropped in the order like I predicted. And, I didn't actually see him going to AAA, but, I mean, his defense was so bad that wasn't going to keep him in the majors. So he was just a total bust pick. Javier Baez, however... I had him as a don't, and the line that I gave for him, I had him at 15 homers, 15 steals, 255 average, 50 runs and 60 RBIs. He actually hit 23 home runs, only stole 10 bases, though, but hit 273 with 75 runs, 75 RBIs. So a little bit better than I had him at. Still think that he was one of the most overdrafted guys, but he didn't really kill you if you did draft him. The dudes that I had at shortstop, Marcus Semien, I'm just going to take an NA on him because he missed like half of the season due to injury. And then the aforementioned Orlando Arcia was a dude for me as well. I had him going 12 homers, 22 steals with a 250 average, 60 runs and 65 RBI. He actually hit 15 home runs, only stole 14 bases though, and hit 277 with 56 runs and 53 RBIs. So he was kind of, you know, one of the guys that, I think he was just really, really slow out of the gate, and then he was really hot in midseason, and then he really turned into crap again at the end of the season. So hopefully if you just rode him while he was hot in the middle of the season, you got the best of those numbers. And my bonus dude was Jorge Polanco of the Twins, and it's kind of unfair to look at his numbers on the whole as well because he was just crap for the beginning of the season, and then pretty much after the All-Star break, he was lights out. But anyway, I had him going 12-12. 12 home runs, 12 steals with a 275 average, 80 runs scored, and 75 RBI because I thought he would be hitting second all year when, in fact, that slow start got him demoted to the bottom of the order. He actually went up going 13-13 with a 256 average, but only had 60 runs, and although I was pretty much dead on with the RBI, he had 74. He did eventually get moved up. He was hitting third in the order for, like, all of September. Mm-hmm. So he finally came on. It took a little longer than I had hoped. But if you're in a deep league, then that's the kind of player that I'm going to always try to pick out for my bonus dudes that will cost you absolutely nothing and hopefully turn you some profit. So I'll turn it back over to you, Ron.
Next guy I'll go with, I'll kind of go one that I think I got right. Now, it just kind of depends upon the context in which you drafted him and what you were expecting. But he's a guy that he's one of those guys that just any format I'm not looking to get at all, that I'm not a fan of, I don't like him, is Rougned Odor. And, you know, I like him. 30 bombs is nice. 15 bombs or 15 steals is nice. But the average plummeting all the way down to 204, the on base at 252, it hurts you in a lot of places. Now, if you can compensate for it other spots and kind of lift him up a little bit, but when you look at kind of the default, I just looked at the ESPN rankings here. He's the 20th ranked at the position. So that to me is pretty far down for a guy. Now, he did play in every game, so he is durable. And the K rate's a little high, but I think the K rate being high is kind of becoming commonplace, so it's hard to kind of hold that against him. But I don't know if it's worth hurting you in the other categories to get what you're going to get from him. So that was a guy that I avoided in a lot of places that a lot of people, I think, were a little bit higher on than I was.
Very good. I'm going to go ahead and just blast through my my best picks list here. So I'll just give you a few names. Andrew Benintendi, I was pretty high on, simply because, and I believe we've discussed this before, he and Bregman were kind of similar in my eyes as far as talent and what they could provide, although they're different skill sets. And Bregman, I thought, was going way too early, considering Benintendi was going much later. And lo and behold, Benintendi goes 20-20, puts up really good counting stats, walked at a 10% clip, basically put together a really good year. So I'm pretty happy about taking that one. Big comeback was Andrew McCutchen. He ended the season hitting 279, 363, 486. I didn't say he was going back to the 300, 400, 500 slash lines of days of old, but he's better than, say, last year or a couple of years ago when he struggled as well. And he came back in a big way, hit 28 homers, stole 11 bases. So pretty happy about that one, too. Dallas Keuchel, I know Nate was down on him. We argued a couple times about that. Ended the season with a 2.9 ERA. Got hurt a little bit, so he only threw 150 innings, but still like it. Of course, Jake Lamb, I was really high on too. He did not make the strides against lefties that I was hoping to see, so I may be kind of backing off of him a little bit. But I mean, if he gets enough plate appearances to get right against right-handers, he's really good. Hit 30 homers, 6 stolen bases, basically 250, 360, 490.
Yeah, he had an exact repeat of his 2016 season, basically. Sucked against lefties, sucked in the second half.
Yep, that's pretty much it. So I don't know, maybe there's still some leaps and bounds to be made. I mean, he's what, 27, so he's still kind of young, but until I see that growth against a left-hander, I don't think he ever becomes elite. I just think he becomes really good.
Yeah.
Edwin Diaz was a guy I wanted to bring up, not because I was really against him, but because yet again a friend of mine came out in the preseason and said he is Kenley Jansen. Like, wherever you're going to take Kenley Jansen, you might as well just take Edwin Diaz because that's what he's going to be. And I thought that was absurd because, A, closers are so volatile, and just that's insane to me. So anyway, I was pretty much proved right on that one. He still had a decent season, 3.27 ERA, struck out over 12 per 9, had 34 saves, but he's certainly no Kenley Jansen. So I just kind of wanted to point that one out, that I'm not going to pay for, you know, even the elite young guaranteed closer, because sometimes it just doesn't quite work out that well. And then last one I wanted to bring up was, of course, Handjob Ramirez. Oh, another guy we talked about in the preseason, Nate. Didn't have a very good year. 242, 320, 429. Had 23 homers and only one stolen base. Just pretty mediocre.
Oh, yeah. It's probably worse than mediocre in the fantasy realm.
Basically, considering the way offense played out this year, absolutely. Yeah. I think the 23 homers has value into itself, but yeah, again, everybody hits homers, so it really wasn't that valuable.
Yeah, I think he's just to the point of his career where he's just a back end option in all drafts this year, or, you know, moving forward. But you know, to that point, the 23 home runs, if you don't have somebody on your on your team, like if you aren't stacked with people who hit 20 plus home runs, then they're actively hurting you in home runs nowadays, just because the power is just so obscene.
Yep.
And that sort of plays right into a guy who you touched on. So I'm going to actually roll into my third base dudes and don'ts and start with Alex Bregman, whom you mentioned. I prognosticated him with 22 home runs, 10 steals, 265 average, 75 runs, 75 RBI. Van, both you and I were against him in the preseason, thought his value was too high as being overdrafted, because I just did not see him, you know, hitting at the top of the lineup, and he didn't, you know, so his runs in RBI were going to be capped, and, you know, he's a young player, can go through struggles, all that. So he ended up finishing 19-17 with a 284 average, scored 88 runs, and drove in 71 RBI. So pretty close, more runs than I thought, for sure, and definitely more steals, but, you know, less power. And so 19 home runs, that's hurting you at third base and as a corner infielder. But he did really, you know, as much as I was against him, as in the redraft, just because of his ADP, I really, really like him in the long term in dynasty and keeper leagues. And he really came on in the second half. His first half OPS was 757, and in the second half it was 903. He really came on, and he ended up hitting leadoff sometimes. He ended up hitting higher in the lineup. So moving forward in dynasty leagues, I do love him. And Justin Turner was my other don't. And I had him for 22 homers, 80 runs, 85 RBI, 275 average. And he hit 21 homers with 72 runs scored, 71 RBI, and a 322 batting average. I guess I'll ring the bell on that one. He had 543 plate appearances. I gave him 575. So I did, you know, have him missing some time. So while he hit for a much higher average, it's still not great overall production. Although it is great, you know, the beard, the torment of the league. It's not like I don't like the guy.
all the pillaging and the Viking boats, sure. Yeah, it all goes great together.
Exactly. So my dudes at third base, Michael Franco, I had him basically just building a little bit on the 2016 season that he posted. Had him with 28 bombs, 85 runs, 90 RBI, assuming he hit in the third spot all year with a 260 batting average. He hit 24 home runs, but he only hit 230. And so he ended up getting dropped in the lineup. He only scored 66 runs and drove in 76. It's weird. Like, his batted ball mix was identical to 2016, but his BABIP fell from 271 to 234. I don't know why. His hard contact also remained the same, which was, it was never great to begin with, but still is over 30%. So I don't know. Just a bad year to own Michael Franco. I think he'll be better in the long run. But my other dude was Moose, Mike Moustakas. I prognosticated him at 28 home runs with 85 runs scored, 85 RBI, and a 275 batting average. He hit 10 more home runs than that. He had 38 homers, 75 runs scored, 85 RBI, and a 272 batting average. Not too bad. And then my bonus dude was Nick Castellanos, who knows what that guy's name is, but I had him 23 homers, 90 runs, 80 RBI, 270 average. He hit 26 home runs, scored 73 runs, and drove in 101 with a 272 average. I had no idea until I looked up his final season numbers that he actually drove in over 100 runs. That kind of blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah, quick note on him. I was looking up his numbers the other day. He actually had a pretty good season. And I don't know, maybe I just had it in my mind that, you know, he had that struggle early on with the batting average. He's hitting like 230
really slow
for a while.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's a good second half guy too. Like, you were referencing some of those, Nate. He was one of those that's right up there for second half performances that were up there.
Well, he was absolutely just the most unlucky man on earth in the first half. Everything you looked at just pointed towards huge positive regression, and it finally came.
It did. And yeah, finishing 279 or whatever it was, that was nice. I was happy to see it. Still like to see him walk a little more. But other than that, I think he's a prototypical example of a young player slowly becoming something. Like, we sometimes we'll see these guys, your Benintendis, your Trouts, your Harpers or whatever. Not that Benintendi's at that level, but they just come out and they play really well. Whereas Castellanos, whatever, has just kind of grown into something of value.
Indeed. Do you have anything else for us, Ron?
A couple real quick that I got right that are ones that I'm proud of, that I kind of, they're guys that I invested as many places as I could, and I was able to get him pretty late too. Yadier Molina is a guy that I had a ton of places at catcher, and you don't think of him being a huge offensive guy. And you look at his 2016, there wasn't a whole lot there. I mean, the average is nice for the catcher spot, but as far as counting stats, he had some pretty decent improvements this year. 18 bombs, 82 RBI, and even stole you 9 bases. And I don't think you were expecting to get that out of Yadi Molina. So that's a guy
that
helped me.
Where the hell did that come from?
Yeah. Right, yeah. And that's a guy that I had in that Couch Tomatoes League that helped me out. And Marcus Stroman's another guy that I invested in heavily really late in a couple places, and it ended up paying off quite a bit. A couple that I ended up got correct that were going to be wrong. The main one was, I think a lot of people got this one too, but I'll throw it out there. Kyle Schwarber, I think a lot of people had that right on the money, that the bombs were going to be there and there was nothing else, and that's kind of how he ended up. One other one that I got wrong that I was big on, and I think a lot of people were, was Ian Desmond coming to Coors, that he was going to be a lock for 25-25, and that definitely didn't happen. So he's a guy that luckily I wasn't able to get in a lot of places, and that hindsight being 2020, that turned out to be a good thing. But it was strange for me to see him struggle like he did. Of course, he dealt with injury as well, but I figured the numbers of Coors would be a little bit better.
You know, real quick to touch on Ian Desmond before I finish out my list, I didn't really understand the love for him, because prior to last year, he was on a downward slope and everybody knew it. And everyone was, you know, backing out because he was the shortstop still, but they were like, yeah, well, he's a guy who doesn't walk. It's just, it's a time bomb. It's waiting to blow up. And then he has the thing last year where he had a little bit of success and he played center field and great. And then suddenly this year, he's this really valuable left fielder or center fielder. I just didn't get it. So I avoided him at all costs and that worked out for me. But I just did not get the love, and I never will get the love for him at that point. I liked him as a shortstop early on, but then he kind of fell apart. To go ahead and give you my worst picks, basically these are guys that I either liked or didn't like that succeeded or didn't succeed. Kevin Gausman was a guy I really liked in the preseason, and boy, he sucked. He was awful. I still think there's maybe a little something there. Yeah, I know, it's kind of underselling it, but boy, he was bad. Dansby, I didn't say was going to, you know, blow the world up on fire because he was so good, but he sure was really, really bad. Dansby Swanson. Nate, you and I were high on Matt Carpenter coming into the year, and he pretty much struggled, but I know there was some shoulder issues there, so there's still opportunity for improvement. Jose Bautista, I mean, I knew he wasn't going to do what he used to do, but I didn't think he'd go, you know, 201, 301 or whatever with 20 home runs. I thought there'd be at least a decent season, and it was pretty much a joke. And then a guy that I said I thought was going to start slipping a lot this year did not, and that's Nelson Cruz. Still hit almost, I think he hit 39 home runs, maybe got close to 40 still, but he hit really well, so I expected him to kind of start dropping off, and I was going to shy away from him, but he did what he seems to be doing, and I guess what he's going to continue doing.
Indeed. So let's see, where did I have Matt Carpenter? I guess I put him at second base, so I'll roll through that real quick. Yeah, he was my target supreme coming into the year. Like you said, I think his shoulder issues played a part in only 23 home runs, but he also got super duper fly ball happy just out of nowhere, and that just crushed his batting average. So I think that he's going to be a target supreme for me next year if hopefully he's healthy, and his draft stock is going to be way down. I assume that he will be pretty cheap next year. And if that's the case, I'm very much in, because his plate discipline was just fine.
Oh, yeah.
It was just the power and the batted ball mix. So I think he can correct that. So second base, Matt Carpenter. Brian Dozier, I had him as a don't, and he refuses to die. Hit 34 home runs with 16 steals at a .269 average. It's, you know, that worked out for me. He was cheap enough where I bought him in the Fart AL Only Auction League. And then had him on my score sheet league as well. I had him at 27 homers and 15 steals, but I just thought he could hit .245. That's what I had him at. And his batting average was fine, and he was really, really good. I also had Ian Kinsler as a don't. That one went pretty well. I had him at 14 home runs, 10 steals. He had 22 home runs and 14 steals, but a .236 average was pretty detrimental, and 90 runs, 52 RBI. That's 23 fewer RBI than I even had him at, 52 RBI. Pretty bad. So my dudes, yeah, Matt Carpenter, talked about him. Logan Forsythe, I had as a dude, absolutely did nothing this year.
Yeah, he was bad.
He was injured right out of the gate, and then he just never recovered after. He was just dog crap when he came back. Totally got Wally pipped by Chris Taylor, of all people. So total whiff there. Bonus dude that I had though, Cesar Hernandez. Yeah, Ron, we were both on the Hernandez train in the preseason. So I had him for 5 homers, 22 steals, a .280 average, 100 runs scored. I was very bold on him, and only 65 RBI. He only played 128 games. He missed over a month due to injury. So he still ended up hitting 9 home runs and stealing 15 bases with a .294 average, and he scored 85 runs. So, you know, extrapolate that out, that would have been 100 runs. It would have been right. Bingo, bango.
Not terrible.
Not terrible. And so do you guys have any left?
I got all mine out.
I just have a question. You mentioned a guy real quick, and I know we're kind of – we'll speculate about next season later on and you know, whatever. But you mentioned Chris Taylor. Chris Taylor, to me, seems like a guy that might be a little overhyped going into next year. What do you guys think?
Absolutely. I'm going to be avoiding him like the plague. I think there's probably some value to be had there, and I'm trying to pull up his numbers now. But I don't see that power being sustained, the 21 homers. 17 steals were nice, but he was also – wasn't he caught a lot? No, actually, he was decent, 17 for 21. But just not a guy that I think can sustain the level he had this year. I think he can have value, but I think he's going to be too costly for me to deal with.
Yeah, I've always actually kind of liked him. But that's because I have a weird thing for middle infield prospects for the Mariners. And he eventually came around this year, finally, after I've been off him for years and years. But 261 BABIP, or 361 BABIP, I mean, that's going to be hard to repeat. Just a mediocre 32% hard contact rate. So I think there can be some speed there. And obviously, he's going to score a ton of runs if he continues to lead off for the Dodgers next year. He didn't show any kind of platoon splits, so pretty good leadoff candidate. It's going to depend on his ADP for me. I certainly don't know that he's a 290 hitter with that BABIP. So maybe if he's more like 275, maybe the Dodgers play with their lineup, something like that. So we'll see. I'll probably not be investing him in him next year. I guess I'll say that, but I'm not totally against him at this point. But if you guys had nothing left, I can go through my first baseman real quick and then we can move on.
Do it.
I had my first base was pretty ugly. I did have Will Myers as a don't. That worked out fairly well, which is weird to say because he went 30-20, but I had him at 22 homers and 17 steals and a .255 average with 70 runs scored and 75 RBI. Really not that far away from what he actually did. The 30 home runs, obviously, whiffed on that one. He had 8 more than I projected, but I had him for 17 steals. He had 20. I had him at .255 average. He hit .243. I had him 70 runs. He scored 80. I had at 75 RBI. He had 74. So I do think that in a way that worked out. He didn't kill you anyway. So I actually thought that he would miss some time. So I kind of baked that into my projection. And he didn't. He stayed very healthy. He had 649 plate appearances. My other don't was Eric Hosmer. He actually was better than I thought. I had him at 18 homers, 90 RBI, .270 average. He hit 25 home runs with a .318 average, so 94 runs, 98 RBI, so not the end of the world. He didn't kill you at all.
But I want to point out, too, with Hosmer, and this is the thing I will always say about it, people talk about the power, like, oh, he hit 25 home runs, it's pretty good. He also had 671 plate appearances. If he's a first baseman that has to have almost 700 plate appearances to get to 25 homers, it's not that valuable. Now, the .318 average was, and I don't know if I believe in that, but yeah, he had an okay year. He had a year that, if you just look at it, glance at it, you go, wow, it was a pretty good year. But then you dig a little deeper, and it's a little more concerning. With the power output this season, the 25 home runs was nothing, and 6 stolen bases was, you know, nothing to really help you in a category.
Right, yeah, and 25 home runs at first base, not that great anymore. Mm-mm.
I'm looking to see. I'm curious now as to where he finished as far as ranked at the position. ESPN actually has him ranked 3rd at first base.
I never listen to those because those value stolen bases too.
Right, yeah. That's the player rater. I think I could pull up what Yahoo has, but I would need a minute to do that. And I've got to spout about my horrible dudes at first base first. I had Greg Bird.
That, I'll check it out.
Okay. Yeah, I had Greg Bird as a dude. after I had him before his monster preseason when his ADP shot through the roof. By the time it was like everybody was actually drafting, he was being overdrafted. So it was kind of bad timing there. He ended up missing most of the season due to injury. He's at least playing now. I still like him a lot in the long term. God, he always looks so angry. He's got angry eyebrows. Cracks me up every time. And then Tommy Joseph was my other guy. Ugh. I had him for 28 homers, 70 runs scored, 85 RBI, and a 265 batting average. He hit just 22 home runs with a 240 batting average and was basically completely overshadowed by Rhys Hoskins in the second half. Blech. And my bonus dude was Swaggy V, Danny Vogelbach. I still hold out hope that he'll be good, but that
you're the only one who does.
He spent the year at AAA, and his numbers are really good again in AAA, but he just comes up to the major leagues, and they don't give him much leash either, but when he has been up, he sucks. But I did say, because I was reading back for, you know, what I wrote for all this stuff, and I did say that, like, don't draft him in shallow leagues. You know, this is a very, very deep league thing. You can pretty much just pick him up if he gets hot. So that's the kind of things that I'm going with for my bonus dudes. And then outfield, I actually couldn't find that list. So the only guy that I remember did well is Shin-Soo Choo.
Yeah,
I was harping on
him.
Yeah, I was harping on him all preseason. And I had him going. Oh, no, that's right. I didn't have the list, so I didn't I couldn't pull my prognostications. But he went 22-12 with a 261 batting average, 96 runs scored, and 78 RBI. Not too bad. And I did pull this up. He was the 23rd outfielder, sort of by Yahoo OBP rankings. I was in the podcast league. I looked that up. And he finished above the likes of Will Myers, Yasiel Puig, Eric Thames, and most importantly, Adam Duvall. So there's that.
Ron's no just comment, angrily Ron. Sitting mm-hmm. there thinking mm-hmm. about throwing baloney at the screen.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Oh, passive okay. aggressiveness here. I see.
I'm good.
What it is.
No, see, it, okay. And I was waiting for this to come up tonight. I was waiting for him to get mentioned, and I knew he would. It's all out of context as to where you can get Adam Duvall. Now, I will say he's go. No JD Martinez. He's no JD Martinez. Yep. But 100 picks later, I'll take the numbers from that. And you can have JD. Like you can have JD Martinez.
You know what I like about Adam Duvall? If I have to say something positive about him for the first time ever,
like therapy.
Is that he's. He's got a really cool like cowboy name, you know. Like I picture him in Wranglers in a cowboy hat, and he's just like kicking some hog's ass or something like that.
Smoking a Marlboro, and
oh yeah,
he's got his horse tied up outside the stadium. Yeah, I could see
just reeks of rawhide,
spurs on his boots.
Yeah, so he's a man's man.
Well, he is, and see when JD Martinez is hurt next year and missing 75 games. And Adam Duvall is out there smoking Marlboros and kicking ass. You know, we'll revisit this.
We will. All right. Do we want to take a break here since we're pretty far into the show and then do the interview?
Sure. Let's
Does that
do
work?
It.
Okay. And then we'll come back on the other side and talk about our biggest surprises of 2017 and round out the show. So congratulations again. We'll talk with Adam Wright, who was the second place champion of the NastyCast Podcast League for 2017. He won himself a sweet NastyCast t-shirt, a whole buttload of Dutz pretzels, and you know, eternal fame and glory. So without further ado, here he is. All right. And joining us now on the NastyCast, it is the second place champion of the NastyCast Podcast League for the 2017 season. Adam Wright, congratulations. You did a hell of a job defeating me, but you
Thank
failed.
You.
How does that feel?
I beat everybody else, so I'm better at that.
You beat me, that's what matters, because even though I finished fifth, I'm still the winner of this league in my heart.
We'll just let you keep on thinking that, then.
There you go.
Since I'm not in the league, you guys are all winners in my book.
Oh, that's sweet. So, Adam, we're just talking. You nearly beat me. You nearly did. But, by one point, you jumped up right at the end of the season. And so I kind of wanted to dig into your team a little bit and your draft, and because you did very well throughout the season. And you led the league with 57 moves. So I just wanted to know, like, as far as, was there any waiver wire gold that you struck with all those moves? And, did you make any, trades or anything as well?
I didn't make any trades. There was some a lot of waiver wire moves were just guys that I lost faith in a little too quickly. I can't think offhand. I think I could have probably kept, what's his name, second baseman for the Pirates.
Jordy Mercer. No, wait.
No, he's short.
The Warhammer?
The Warhammer. I just wanted to bring it up for that reason. Second base for Pirates. White. Alan Hansen? No, wait, he's gone.
No.
He is on the
Josh Harrison, is it? He's second, third.
I got rid of him a little sooner than I probably should have, because he stayed pretty good for a while there.
Yeah.
And I caught bait with him a little bit too soon, but that's all right. I did pick up Matt Olson, but I didn't play him. I didn't start playing him until towards the end of the season, so I should have probably played him a little more.
Boy, he had a good last half of the season. So no matter what you, or no matter how many games you played him, you got a good handful of games out of him just because of the phenomenal last half that he had. I have a question for you, actually. I was looking at the overall roto standings because this was a 15-team standard roto league, or we did OBP instead of average. You had actually pretty good points in the ERA whip pitching categories. You had 12 ERA, 14 whip, but I looked at your team and that really blew my mind because it feels like it's Scherzer and then stuff. So I was wondering, how did you deal with your pitching throughout the season? Because like your number two name on this list is, I don't know, Michael Wacha, Colin McHugh. So not really some exciting names. You have Matt Moore in there at the end of the season, some decent relief pitching. But what did you do pitching wise to garner as many points as you did with some names like that?
Well, that was a lot of my waiver moves. Just looking, I would usually look on like Saturday at the pitching matchups for the next week and pick them up for Sunday. So that way I would have them to put them in on Monday. Just rotated them.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And it is tricky with, cause this was a weekly league on Yahoo. And one of the things that drives me nuts about that is how they do everything. You have to have the player picked up by Saturday and then set your lineup, you know, by game time on Monday. So you have to really think ahead to be successful in a league like that. And you did very well. So I actually stole Ron's question about trading without even thinking he was going to ask that, but I just led right into the transactions. So Ron, do you have anything for Adam before I steal another question?
Yeah. So we kind of go hand in hand with the trading thing. What was the worst trade offer you got, if you can remember off the top of your head, just for the whole league? What was the worst trade offer that somebody sent you that you wanted to just blast them as to why it sucked so bad?
I'm sure there were quite a few. I don't remember. There were some when Trout was on the DL for a while there.
Okay.
People were trying to get him off of me, but I don't remember deals exactly what they were, but they were pretty dumb.
If it was any players for Trout, it was a bad trade, regardless.
Yeah. Did any of those horrendous trade offers come from either of the other two gentlemen on this podcast?
I don't believe so.
Okay. All right.
I only make good trades, Ron.
Well, that's kind of what I figured. But
I guess... Didn't you have a really bad trade this year in that league? Trey Turner? You traded him away and then he immediately got hurt?
Well, yeah, that was bad for me, though. That was an even trade at the time. Oh. We're talking about trade rape here.
Gotcha. Oh, I see. Okay.
But it all worked out because I won the league anyway. So, I was just, like, crushed when he went down in the middle of the season, too. I don't know if you remember that. I was just despondent. I was ready to give up on the league and I winning anyway. But anyway, you know, you mentioned Mike Trout, Adam. So, did you have any specific strategy going into the draft? You spent $60 on Mike Trout, $39.
It was like 70, wasn't it?
I had 60 when I pulled it up, so I think it was. I think it was 60 because I just looked at these numbers beforehand.
Yeah, it was torn. It should have been.
It was 60. Yep. This is in a $250 budget. 260, the standard 260. So, did you go into the draft saying I'm getting Scherzer and Trout, or did it just kind of end up that way?
I wanted a top hitter and a top pitcher. And I didn't have Trout in any other leagues, and I wanted him. So I got him.
Bingo bango. You also had
way to do it.
Yeah. Also, Elvis Andrews at $8 was a great buy. Eduardo Nunez at $6. As much as I was not excited about him, he did really well in the stolen base department. So $6 there was nice. And then Scope for $8 and then Souza for $1. So did you have sort of a hunch going into the season on any of those particular guys that ended up doing really well for you?
Well, yeah, there were a few guys that I kind of thought of as value plays, like those guys you mentioned there, which is why I didn't feel so bad spending so much on Trout, because I had a feeling I've had what's his name? I keep on forgetting what I'm talking about.
Happens to us all the time. Well, Scope.
Yeah. There's one league I'm in. Every year he gets dropped, and every year I pick him up. And every year he does decently well for me.
Well, this was a little bit more than decently. So yeah, it was a good turnout on this season for sure.
Yeah, and that other league I was talking about, he got dropped in that league this year too, and I picked him up.
Yeah, and I would say your moves were definitely your big key here, because you've got a lot of guys on your team that were probably not drafted that turned into gold. Paul DeJong is on there. Matt Olson. You know, guys like that came through and gave you a lot of points for nothing, which is what we'll kind of talk about at some point with this whole season being just kind of a weird one anyway. But the question I kind of have for you is, who do you think was your least valuable player on your team? You could have even cut them, but who did you spend money on or have hopes for that didn't work out for you?
Well, for a while there, I did have Gregory Polanco on the team. I did cut bait with him.
Yeah, he struggled quite a bit.
He got really annoying. And Ian Desmond was pretty annoying, too.
Yeah, both guys that I was really high on coming into the season, too. So kudos giving up on Gregory Polanco, because I held on to him for a long time, too. I know it's tough to cut bait with him.
I can't quit.
Well, I live in Western Pennsylvania, too, so I hear nothing about nothing but Pirate stuff around here.
So I guess I got a question here as far as your draft. Where was, because I'm not in the league, so I can't see the stats or anything, so I'm kind of blindly asking you this. Where's an area that you kind of thought maybe you could have done a little better in the draft, like maybe a stat category or position, and then maybe how did you kind of try to remedy that as the season went on and make it better?
I think I came out of it with one closer. And I know with a league this size, I did want a little more than that. So I just kept my ear out for who sucks at closing and looked at who was behind them and picked those guys up.
Now, for your one closer, was it a top-level guy or was it just kind of a guy that you got at a discount?
It was Giles.
Okay.
I'm not sure what I spent for him, but.
Yeah, Kid Giles, and then you ended the year with Shane Green on your team, which was a great pickup because he ended up getting a decent amount of saves for the Tigers towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
So that's a good way to do that, is if you're going to do that. In a 15-team league, if you think about it, there's 30 closers in baseball. If you have one, you're arguably average. If you can get two, then you should be able to play the pack and then, you know, get some vulture saves here and there. So I think you did that just about right anyway.
So what do you do for a living, Adam?
I work for a company that is contracted by the federal government to do their background checks.
Black ops, shadow ops, sort of thing, sure.
Yeah.
So he essentially knows everything about us already before we even get on the show. So, yeah.
Well, we get the background checks for the mail carriers all the time, so.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because we had somebody, I don't know how they got hired, and then, like, after a month or two, they found out that they lied, and they actually had a felony on their record, and they got fired right away. So I don't know how they gamed the system, but, man.
Interesting. Yeah. And then Nate marked, goes, also, it was me, so.
Yeah, no.
All that public indecency, that'll do it.
I can't. Disclose his name, but it rhymes with Nathan Bakken.
Don't judge me. All right. Well, real quick before we get out of here, I would like to know, how did you find our humble little podcast?
I was just searching through the podcast app on the iPhone, just search Fantasy Baseball, and Nasty Cast popped up. So this looks interesting. So I started listening to it.
Simple enough. All right.
Yeah. And we're sorry to disappoint you on being interesting.
I want to give a shout out to another podcast, if that's all right.
Absolutely.
In This League Fantasy Podcast, guys, Bogman and the Welsh and the ITL Army. Big shout out to you guys.
Yeah, we've last year we had the not the Bogman, the Welsh on the podcast, and he was fantastic. Due to scheduling, we couldn't get Bogman, unfortunately. But yeah, those are absolutely great guys, and they put on a fantastic show. And they get a lot more downloads than us, so good for them for doing good work. But they work really, really hard. It is absolutely insane how much work, especially the Welsh, puts into, because they just do a ton of podcasts. It's bananas. I would go crazy.
They have a radio show too on Wednesday nights.
Yeah. Oh my God, I couldn't even imagine. So yeah, the well-deserved shout out there. Anything else you want to get out, Adam, while you got the floor?
That's it.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you so much for listening to the show and for playing along with us, man. We really appreciate it.
No problem. It's fun. It's a good time.
Join us next year, and maybe you can take over that number one spot from Nate.
All right. It's mine.
Bold words. All right. We'll take a quick break here. Come back to round out the finale. She's up all night till the sun. I'm up all night to get some. She's up all night for good fun. I'm up all night to get nasty.
You're listening to the BGFS Network, where we keep fantasy real.
All right, thanks again to Adam. He was fantastic. Had a good time talking to him.
He was fantastic. Let's put it out there.
Ooh, that's true. I didn't give him enough credit.
Yes, I agree. I concur.
Very well. So we've got one last segment here before we send the show off for the year. And that is our biggest surprises of 2017. That's one of the reasons I love this game of baseball, is because it never ceases to surprise me. And this year really did not hold back. There was a lot of crazy crap that happened, and I loved every second of it. So let's go ahead and start with you, Van. Give us, I've got three things listed here. I'm guessing some of you guys are going, you know, there's going to be some overlap most likely. So let's just start with you, Van. What is one of your biggest surprises of 2017?
Well, this year I kind of like to call it the resurgence of the old man, because there were a lot of guys that were supposed to be just bit pieces or secondary players that had really good years. Mark Reynolds comes to mind. He hit 30 home runs and hit like 270. How did Mark Reynolds hit 270? That's bizarre to me.
Coors.
Yeah, Coors. Ryan Zimmerman hit 300 with 36 homers, 100-plus RBI. Yonder Alonso hit more than 3 home runs, so that's, you know, a big deal. So, it was just kind of a weird season, and I'm going to go off on a bit of a tangent here, and I said this about the playoffs the other day. If every single game in the playoffs is going to be 8-7, I'm going to get bored really quickly. And this year as a whole, as a microcosm, you can look at it and see that home runs were way up. So when you have so many home runs, it devalues the home run, in my opinion. So the fact that we've got Mark Reynolds hitting 30, Ryan Zimmerman hitting 36, Aaron Judge, a rookie, hitting 50, it makes me question, like, instead of being like, holy cow, Aaron Judge just hit 50 home runs as a rookie, this is amazing. Instead, I'm going, I just hit a lot of home runs in a year that everybody had home runs. And I don't know if that's a good thing, in my opinion, for baseball. I know people like the home runs and the excitement, but with just so many of them, it just makes it a home run boring to me. It just takes the fun out of it. So I'm kind of curious to see how this progresses. Was it really the ball? Was it something Rob Manfred did in secret with the Illuminati to make more home runs happen? Will pitchers adjust? You know, it's just an interesting thing to see, and I'm curious how everything goes, because I think the days of, you know, the exciting 1-0 games where a home run in the eighth is what wins it, I just don't think that's going to happen very much anymore, because it's just offense is so crazy high across the board now.
Oh, indeed. And there was a point that I was going to make on that, and it is eluding me right now. But that is part of
what Alonso, yeah.
I was going to bring him up for sure. Ron, what surprised you?
Main things I have are a couple of individual performances, and they happen to both be Red Sox, and I hate that because I can't stand the Red Sox. I think we were kind of having that dialogue earlier. The fact that Craig Kimbrell had a 0.68 WHIP,
wow,
for the season in the innings period is insane. 35 saves, just dominant across the board. A guy that I think as high as I was on Marcus Stroman in one of my leagues, actually I needed a closer and somebody offered me Kimbrell for Stroman, and that turned out to be a pretty nice deal in my favor. So that kind of speaks to his dominance right there. But it also kind of speaks to Kenley Jansen's dominance as well, as Kimbrell was the second-ranked reliever. So that tells you a little bit about Jansen right there. The other thing I had was I thought Chris Sale's season was pretty insane with the 300 Ks. And you know, we talk about the way that he pitches, and we actually talked about him on the Dynasty podcast because I actually took him as the first pitcher off the board ahead of Clayton Kershaw, had a Scherzer in our dynasty format. So his season, his numbers across the board, not that you don't expect ace-like stuff from him, but I don't know if I really expected him to take the step that he took this year with the 2.9 ERA, the WHIP under one, with the amount of innings that he put out there as well. Because we always talk about, you know, when we're waiting for that injury to happen. But it hasn't happened, and who knows, it may not happen. You know, the guys like Scherzer are pitching well into their 30s and putting up dominant numbers. So he was the third-ranked pitcher off you know, going into the season and played really, really well. Overall, just the amount of homers that were hit, the amount of power and scoring, and just, you know, I'm one of those guys, I'm kind of like Van. It's fun to see, but when it becomes this commonplace, it does get a little bit boring because everybody does it, you know. So I will say overall, as far as the way a lot of the teams finished, I don't know if there was a whole lot of surprises out there as far as the way the standings were, but overall, fun season, you know. And I think we are in for some good playoff baseball. I think the playoffs have been pretty good so far. So those are probably my biggest two, is just a couple individual performances that caught my eye when I was looking through this. The other thing that caught my eye as I was looking through this was I don't know if you guys knew this. I didn't know this, but apparently Craig Kimbrell's nickname is Dirty Craig.
Oh, that sounds really? Like I didn't know that. Like you'd find it on what's the website with the bad shoot. I'm drawing a blank on it. Basically, it sounds like a dirty sex trick.
Well, maybe I read it wrong, and maybe that was like something that he enjoys, and that's not his nickname. I don't know.
It could be.
So,
Urban Dictionary. Yeah, that it sounds like a term on Urban Dictionary.
Oh, I've learned a lot from Urban Dictionary over the years. And you touched on that Dynasty mock draft that we're doing on Fantrax Dynasty, Ron. And that actually is the point that I was going to make earlier, just about the power, is that's sort of suppressed the, you know, the power guys, their value in the startup drafts. And we're going to see that next year, too, because it has definitely become more ubiquitous. And that was one of the biggest surprises for me in 2017, is just all the waiver wire power that was to be had. You know, Justin Smoke hitting 38 home runs, Lomo hitting 38 home runs. The aforementioned Mike Moustakas had 38, Zimmerman with 36, Travis freaking Shaw hit 31 home runs. Yonder Alonso had 28, like you said, Ben. So if you whiffed on corner infield, you were okay if you played the wire. And then the other surprise, obviously, Aaron Judge, Cody Bellinger. A lot of these rookies just beasting out when they get called up. Reese Hoskins, too.
Reese Hoskins, yeah.
Yeah, just beasting out on this new ball. So I think I'm going to be a little bit more apt to stash hitters moving forward, just because you're seeing this crazy progression right off the bat, whereas it didn't used to happen quite so often. Yeah, so I might be a little bit more prospect happy, because it seems like everybody's power all of a sudden just magically ticks up as soon as they go to the major leagues, whereas it used to go the other way.
Indeed. And which is funny, too, because another point I have in our biggest surprises is this was the year of offense, and yet I'm going to read you some statistics from the Blue Jays, the Toronto Blue Jays, who I thought, even though they lost E5 and had some changes to their team, I thought they were still going to have a pretty good offense because of the stadium they're in, on and on. But their offense was so bad. They were 29th in the majors in batting average at .240, which isn't too absurd because they did have a lot of swing and miss. But they were 10th in overall in home runs, which, you know, 10th isn't bad. But, I mean, this is a top five team in home runs, it seems like, for the last however many years. 26 with runs scored at .693 and 25th overall in OPS at .724. So the Blue Jays being so bad offensively really kind of surprised me there.
Ugh, yeah, and they're going to be in the tank for a while, I think.
Yeah,
it's a tough division.
They need to really just go into the rebuild. I don't think they will. I think they're going to try and do the maybe we can hit the playoffs for a couple of years like the Angels perpetually do. But they should go into a rebuild, I really
think. Well, the Angels have Mike Trout, though. That's
exactly
the difference.
Yeah, I mean, there's at least some reasons to say that about the Angels, whereas the Blue Jays, I mean, who are their best players? Like Donaldson, who's on the wrong side of 30. So they're a little more, you know, hey, they really should just do the rebuild by now.
Which I don't know if Donaldson will be there next year. I think he'll be part of that. I think they will move him and try to rebuild, at least from that aspect. I don't think he's going to be a Blue Jay start next year.
Yeah, I think they should. Yep.
Anything else? Any other surprises or anything you learned from the season run?
I learned that it's not such a bad thing to hang on. I guess it's hard to explain. I guess because there's guys that I did this with that it worked out, and there's guys that I did this with that I should have cut bait a lot earlier with. But juicy. I think overall, there's guys that you draft and you have them on your list and you expect big things out of them and the breakout or whatever, and you keep waiting for that breakout to come. I think I learned, especially in yearly leagues, that if you cut bait, it's okay to do that and go try to find other ways to bolster your team. Because I think one of the things I got caught up in too much was waiting on players to produce that weren't producing. You mentioned Michael Franco as one of those. In one of my ESPN auction leagues, Michael Franco was a guy that I was big on, and I kept leaving him there. And I think I did that in a couple spots, and I think that really hurt me in a couple of yearly leagues especially. So I think one thing I'm going to start trying to do more of is not waiting around so long on a lot of that production. But like we mentioned in the other podcast as well, Alex Bregman was a guy that I almost did that with a couple times, and it ended up he was kind of right where I expected. I wasn't as big on the buy-in as a lot of other people were, and I wasn't drafting him as highly or spending as much money in an auction. But overall, he ended up working out and putting together a nice little season. So it's not true all the time, but for the most part, I think yearly leagues, I'm going to not be afraid to get rid of a guy and try to find that production somewhere else on the waiver wire.
I think that's interesting, and I agree. There was always a fine line with it where you did need to wait and see if you could, you know, they turn it on. But then this year felt like, you need to cut bait and you need to find somebody. And I think that's also a product of the youth movement. We're seeing less, you know, 35-year-olds and more 22-year-olds play and play well. So that's part of that, in that, you know, this guy's been really good, but I need to just move on from him a little quicker. And I completely agree with that point.
Well, and real quick, what Nate kind of alluded to earlier, and what we kind of said as we've done this all year, is I think out of this year, out of a lot, you know, more so than a lot more, when you do cut bait and you do go on the waiver wire, as long as you're not in an insanely deep league, there's guys you can actually pick up on the waiver wire that are useful, that are going to get you 20 homers or can get you a handful of steals or some runs here and there. So there were actually things out there, especially power-wise, on the waiver wire that you could scoop up and would actually help you out.
Exactly. And that leads into, you know, what I have learned the most as well, is just to pay a little bit more attention to the early season hot streaks and maybe give a little bit less leash to the struggling guys, especially if you just have a roster spot or two at the end of your lineup to play with. Just give those hot guys an ad and maybe swap them out for a week. And if you did that with, you know, like I said before, like Justin Smoke and Logan Morrison, all of a sudden those guys turn into really helpful players for the rest of the league or for the rest of the season. So, you know, and I think also for me, I'm going to adjust my strategy a little bit more towards pitching, since power is just so, like I said, ubiquitous before, and there's no name pitchers or hitters popping up all the time. And more frequently, you're seeing these guys taking these drastic changes to their approach. And all of a sudden these crappy nothing guys are hitting bombs left and right. I'm going to draft pitching a little bit more heavily next year. I'm going to definitely want one of those elite foundational pieces, I think. You know, and there's, you know, leading to those guys that just come out of nowhere. And Scooter Gennett, can I just say that? Scooter Gennett.
Old Scooter.
He hit 27 home runs and drove in 97 RBI with a 295 average.
He might be the guy to point at and say, see, this is what this new ball or this is what this new era of offense does. That guy did this. That he may be the face of it because it's the perfect example of it.
Well, and it's a perfect storm with that. And then, you know, these guys, like I said, changing their approach and trying to hit for more power, the fly ball revolution, that all ties into it as well. So it's kind of the perfect storm this year.
Right. Oh, and, you know, someone posted on that a Facebook group we're part of, and he used a term and he said, I don't remember the exact thing it was, but it was player who struck out the most something or other of all time. But what you have to do when you hear the phrase of all time, you have to realize that's a bit misleading because up until like 1995, striking out was not okay for hitters. They were, if they struck out a lot in a season, they were like, oh man, I sucked. Now it's just like, oh, well, I just struck out. Who cares? No big deal. I struck out 500 times this year. Not a big deal. I hit 40 homers. So that's kind of a misleading phrase, and you have to be careful with some of those. Don't get too caught up in like cute phrases or cute statistics when they're misleading like that. You need to be a little more cautious.
Well, and if you look at things, you know, if you're nerds like us that look at Fangraphs and look at K rate and, you know, you do these kind of things, that's one thing. But when you hear people talking about Aaron Judge, do they mention, I mean, yeah, I guess the streak that he had, okay, fine. But overall in the season, with the amount of home runs that he hit, the OBP he posted, he even stole some bases for you. You're not fixated on the K rate because he's doing so many other things to help you.
Right.
So it's kind of lost in everything that he does. So as long as you're doing this, but like we've mentioned 25% and 30% K rates all the time. It's almost like it's becoming the new norm.
I think it really is. Yeah. We have to really change our perspective on strikeout percentages for hitters. And I think this year is the line. You see now the 30% sucks, but you can get away with it. Whereas last year it was, say, 25%. Like 25% sucks, but sometimes you can get away with it. That number is only risen, and I think it's only going to keep rising.
Oh, just like us.
That's right.
Rising into the stratosphere.
I have one last thing that I learned from this season. Can I go ahead and say it?
No. Yes. And by no, I mean yes.
I learned that I have my very own wolf pack and that there are two of my very best friends out there in the world, and we're all just so great at podcasting that I just like to say I love these two fellas.
Who are you talking about?
Brian and Justin, who are former guests of the Backup Catcher podcast. Just a shout out to them. You guys, Ron and Nate, I hate you both, so yeah.
Thank you.
Those guys are pretty good. I'll second that. Those guys are really good. Yeah.
I think they're overrated myself, but not terrible.
War of words here. I'm going to tell them that. They're going to drive all the way up there to Moose Country with your pickled beer, and they're going to give you the what for.
Maybe even the good business.
just package the pickle in the beer already.
I don't see why they don't. I mean,
you might be onto something there. You might have found your ticket out of the day job there, my friend.
What's the copyright company's phone number? 1-800 copyright my stuff right now.
I'm sure that's
what I'm
it.
Gonna call. Oh, so it's been a hell of a season, guys.
Indeed,
it was a whirlwind. Man, you came on later in the preseason, Ron. Even later than that, What do you guys, how do you feel? Have we improved?
I think we have improved. I think, and this is me talking from personal experience, when I guested the very first time, which was very early on in the Nasty Cast, I was new to podcasting, and I come from a background of journalism and public speaking, so it comes fairly naturally to me, but it felt awkward because I was nervous. The second time when you brought me back for episode 100 of the Nasty Cast, it felt very natural talking to you and Joe and Jesse, the original crew. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that. And then I think as we've gone along, the three of us have gotten quite the rapport. And we're, of course, still doing the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast, so you can hear us year-round there. But I think we've improved, and I think we kind of hit a nice little roll there for a while, and I hope it continues.
Yes. No, I just want to say because you guys kind of did this a couple weeks ago when I was off on my world tour during the hurricane. And you know, I just wanted to say that, you know, I joined you guys a little bit later in the year, and this is something, you know, with the fantasy writing and being able to podcast, it's something that, you know, I've done this for, we've all played fantasy baseball and fantasy sports forever. And it's something that I, you know, I've always had aspirations to do and get involved in. And I've been able to do that the last couple of years with the writing on a couple of different sites. But this is by far one of the most fun things I do throughout my week. I look forward to this. I look forward to just the conversations that we have off the air, the putting the show together on the air. And I really feel like that, It's beyond what I ever could imagine. It's more fun than I ever thought it could be, and I've really gained a couple of great friends through this, and I really appreciate you guys.
I'm gonna shed a tear into my pickled beer.
Yes, likewise. Yeah, you guys have done very, very well. You know, there was a time, and I think I talked about this early in the season, where the NastyCast was almost not to be because there was so much, you know, going on. Joe wasn't going to be able to do the show anymore, and it was just a whole kerfuffle. But I'm very glad that I didn't just shut the lights off, because I've had a hell of a good time talking baseball and everything else with you guys ever since, whether it be on the show or, you know, we text each other all the time now, too. So super, super glad that I made that decision. It was definitely the right one.
And we, through the whole journey, we discovered Home Alone for the Super Nintendo.
It all boils down to that. So, I should just post that video that I took of it. It's so
absolutely
so funny. I should put that on my Twitter. Although it does contain my tits, which might be offensive to some.
Just some, though. I mean, I think the people who offend will be fewer than the people you would gain from having it on.
I think so.
I feel that it could open the door to a whole genre of new NastyCast listeners.
Really reach that niche.
There'll be a whole niche of followers, like the tit followers. Did you show up too when you saw Nate's tits on Twitter?
Yeah. I've been around since the tit incident.
The
tits incident.
Your tits could actually get their own Twitter handle, possibly use out of this as well.
Oh, Nate's tits. I gotta check and see if that's taken at Nate's tits.
I wonder if it is. I genuinely think that probably is taken.
It probably is.
Someone out there is like, yeah, I need to do this.
And but see, what I want to know though is if it, like, it's just random or they're acting as yours.
Oh, I see.
That'd be highly offensive.
I mean, they could already be acting as yours, and you don't even know it.
You could sue them, just like I've been sued by the Trump people for using pictures of him.
Yeah, that's right. How is that legal battle going on with Donald Trump?
It's fine. I mean, if you read the article, it was all positive, wink, wink, in his eyes. So I don't understand the problem. And mostly I'm just ignoring it like every other problem in my life.
That is wise. By the way, guys, breaking news, at Nate's tits, still available on Twitter.
Yeah.
That bitch is mine. All right.
Yes, sir.
All right. I suppose we're going to remain silent, I believe, through the off season. So if you want to continue to hear our voices, we'll still be pumping out some content, slinging some tent, as they say in the biz, over at the Fantrax radio feed. You can check that out on iTunes, on SoundCloud. You can go to Fantrax and find us on the blog page. You know, Google Play, any place that you listen to podcasts, you can find us there and listen all off season as we talk Dynasty Baseball. Aside from that, we'll be back next January for some preseason coverage for 2018, and I am already excited for it. So until then, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.